Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Bowery Radio. My name is Matt Weston, and tonight I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, strongest of them all, BFD. How's it going?
Woo!
That was just for you, UT.
Woo!
Did you know that Brock Osweiler is again going to be the starting quarterback of the Houston Texans?
Well, yeah, and let me tell you how I knew this, is that I permanently have the letters RTYFGHZBB printed on my forehead from banging my forehead on my keyboard for most of the day. So that's how I knew that. I looked in the mirror, and there it was. It looks so much like Red Rum.
I'm glad you explained that, because I had no idea what you were saying at all. I'm just a simple man, like a Lynyrd Skynyrd song. The Texans lost to the Titans. Did you watch this game?
I did. I actually watched it with the lovely Texans Techaway and her family, and we had a great time and ate lots of food and drank lots of beer. And that was how I got through that game.
Well, that's cute. I was really hungover. I stayed until 5 o'clock in the morning. And because I live in San Antonio, I only drink tequila here, nothing else. And I had one eye open, laying on the couch, and my stomach was just a giant lime. And I wasn't going to watch this game at all. I was about to get up and start watching game film, and then I saw that Brock Osweiler was starting the second half, and I had to watch it. And I laid there, and I don't really remember the game. I just remember being, like, in a daze, sending tweets and taking part in the listserv. And I don't remember a lot of things I said even. I went back and watched the condensed game once I kind of became a human being again. But, it was just miserable. You know, like, nothing really good happened. But, like, the only thing that matters is the quarterback situation. So Tom Savage didn't see a blitz coming off the edge. And he fumbled in the end zone, which was recovered by Tennessee for a score. And then he was taken out after a concussion on a quarterback sneak in a meaningless game that, you know, reawoken echoes of Cecil Shorts getting his leg blown out against Atlanta, or Arian Foster blowing out his Achilles against Miami. And then he came back out like he was going to play again after in the second quarter, and then he ended up staying on the sideline the rest of the game. Brock Osweiler took over for the offense. He scored 2 touchdowns on 4th down. He really brought a lot of heart and grit and soul to this offense and the field in general. The Texans really needed a spark in this game. He was there. He was there for, even though if it didn't work out and the good guys didn't lose. And this game he went 21 for 40. For 253 yards, he had 6.3 yards an attempt, which is pretty good, and a QBR 61.6. So, BFD, were you impressed by Brock Osweiler's performance on Sunday morning?
No. No, not at all. I mean, let's just get to Brad Tack, shall we? Is that 21 for 40 is what, 52% completion rating, completion percentage, I'm sorry, 6.3 yards per attempt. It's funny, you say that's pretty good. It's pretty good if you're Brock Osweiler. It sucks if you're the rest of the NFL. And that's the catch with that. He had a couple passes once again that should have been picked off. How many passes has he thrown this year that should have been picked off that would easily drop by defensive players? So he's like the luckiest guy alive when it comes to that sort of thing. So no, it was the same trash heap that we've had to watch all year. There's nothing different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think like 50 of those yards came on that DeAndre Hopkins march and swim over Bryce McCain for wide open throw too. But, you know, like 21 of 40 is, you know, awful. But you can't have a 50% completion percentage unless you're, I guess, like Cam Newton is the only one who's been, you know, that bad when it comes to completion percentage this year. And yeah, it was a bad game. I mean, I guess the only thing that was good was that the passes that should have been intercepted were intercepted, which he's been pretty lucky at, you know, all this year. And that was really, like, the only good thing that kind of came out of that performance from him, was that he did not throw an interception, which has been such a huge, you know, reason why he was benched and why he's been so bad this year.
Yeah, and let's look at it this way, too. And I pick on the AFC South a lot for a reason. Tennessee, going to the game last week, had the 23rd-ranked defense by DVOA. Their secondary is terrible. I really can't stand anybody on their front seven aside from Jarrell Casey. They're not a good defensive football team. They were, Dick LeBeau does a wonderful job disguising blitzes and that sort of thing, but the talent he's got to work with is just absolutely terrible. So the fact that we couldn't do much against a really poor defense, once again, says a lot about the offense.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you brought that up too, because I know we talked about this all year and kind of hammered at it, is that context is really important for any sort of NFL analysis because there's so many variables involved. And, you know, you're exactly right. Like the Titans have one good cornerback, and that's McCourty, who is out. That Sims, due to Corinth's success rate, had an okay year, but he only faced you in 20 targets. But everybody else has just been awful in the secondary. And so this is like the sort of game where anybody, like, you wouldn't expect either Savage or even Oswald coming in to go have success throwing the ball outside to the numbers. And none of them could. I mean, I know Savage only played limited amount of snaps, but even he didn't have success. Oswald couldn't make throws to the sideline at all. And then with Savage, it was still kind of the same issues were there where he's just like, he is just like a 1998 MacBook. Like, he's just so slow and with his null process. You know, it's so corroded. It takes him so long to make decisions. He doesn't pick up blitzes very well. He sees things late. And although he stands tall in the pocket, which some Oswald doesn't do, he still is just not a quick decision maker at all. And that really, you know, hurt him, you know, against Tennessee too. And again, I just want to say this part of it also, is that this is his third year in this scheme. This is his third year in this offense. And yeah, you know, taking like live snaps, taking snaps of the ones, a lot different than taking snaps of the twos and threes and playing scout team. But he's still there in video. He still knows where he should do with the ball. He just doesn't react quickly enough. And I think that's a really big problem if you expect anything out of Tom Savage, even like being like a below average quarterback moving forward.
Yeah, no, I just, from Tom Savage, you nailed it. I mean, really, it's the decision making. It just takes way too much time. And so, Texan Takeaway's father is a Patriots fan, and so he's been watching Tom Brady for the last however many years, and he kept drawing comparison after comparison about how Brady is one of the quickest to get rid of the ball, how much success he has with it, and watching Tom Savage play quarterback and hold on to the ball so dadgum long is a real problem, and it's just not a real problem. It hasn't become a real problem because, A, the Jaguars didn't blitz, and, B, the Titans don't get to the quarterback very well. Once we play a team with a guy with Tom Savage running the show, if we were to play a Raiders team that can get to the quarterback quickly with Khalil Mack and Bruce Irvin, changes everything. I mean, you can't hold on to the ball. You're going to get killed back there. And, you know, this is yet another injury for Savage. A concussion counts as an injury. So he's had the shoulder issue. He's had the leg issues. So he's been all over the place with these injuries already, and he's going to expose himself a la Robert Griffin. Not a good plan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, RG3 is also like a drunk baby deer who just runs and everything. Or just like even just a drunk deer trying to cross the highway, just running into everything possibly can. I agree with that too as well. When it just comes to, you know, what Savage has been doing. And I also think that Bengals game was a good example too. Like, the pass pro wasn't really super bad, but Savage is holding the ball too long. That makes the offensive line seem a lot worse than it really is too. We know that it was kind of speculation yesterday and Sunday as to who was going to start this week. We didn't know, one, because of the performance of Tom Savage, two, Tom Savage's availability, three, Tom Savage's kind of inexperience and if he's going to be able to get practice reps all week. And so I guess the talk is that he's still in the concussion protocol. He hasn't been cleared yet. And so they're not going to wait around and see if he can play or not this week. And it's going to be Brock Osweiler. And so if you're, let's say, regardless of the injury, let's say you had to choose between Tom Savage and Brock Osweiler Sunday, which decision would you make and which quarterback would you start for your Bill O'Brien?
I mean, if all things were considered equal, I would probably have to start Tom Savage. I already know what I've got with Brock Osweiler. I already know it. You know, we have a sample size now of some 20-something games that show me that Brock Osweiler is not an NFL starting, you know, caliber quarterback. And I think you just kind of have to roll the dice and say, look, I can either play the guy who's like one of the worst quarterbacks in the history of the modern NFL, or I can take a gamble with Tom Savage who will make throws and will, you know, at least attempt to make something happen offensively. So that Tom Savage is not even close. I mean, I might be completely wrong. That might be the most utterly wrong decision that was ever decided upon, on BRR. But that's where I would go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would start Savage as well too, and yeah, I mean, I think it just kind of goes back to Osweiler's the worst quarterback in the NFL this year, and you're playing against a Raiders team. We're about to start previewing the game too, but you're going against a Raiders team where, like, you're going to have time to stay in the pocket. You're going to have throws that are going to be open. And you just, like, can't make mistakes. You can't make turnovers if you're going to win this game. And that's just been such a problem with Osweiler, is that he was second to only, I believe, Fitzpatrick and Bortles in interceptions thrown this year. I think he threw either 16 or 14. And, like, that can't happen against the Raiders. Like, this is going to be a run-the-ball game. It's going to be a one-possession game. It's going to be a low-scoring game probably. And you can't give short fields away to Connor Cook this week. And so mainly because of that, I would go Savage. And, you know, whenever you compare both these players, what are kind of differences that you see that Osweiler brings to this offense, even if it's very little, and also what Savage brings to this offense, which is very little too?
Osweiler brings literally nothing. There's not a single positive you can look at.
He's tall.
He's tall and he can take a hit, right? Because that's the two most important characteristics you want in a quarterback, clearly. And we'll get into that more a little bit later in the show as well. So he's inaccurate. He doesn't push the ball downfield. He has absolutely nothing on his throws. He is trash as a quarterback. Tom Savage at least can make throws that Brock Osweiler cannot. He's at least willing to make throws that Brock Osweiler is no longer willing to make. Savage is willing to get the ball downfield, and just purely based upon the mechanics that Savage shows versus Osweiler, he's simply more accurate down the field as well. He's going to have timing issues, of course, but still there's that passing accuracy. I think it's going to be much more there for Tom Savage than it is for Osweiler in the long run. You know, and Sunday's game is just another data point in that. 21 for 40 against a trash defense is simply not acceptable. And, you know, this, you cannot succeed as an NFL quarterback, even as a backup, at throwing it with the 55% completion rate that Brock's throwing at this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think kind of with Savage, what you get is you get a worse decision maker. You get somebody who stands in the pocket a lot better, who will look into, pass rush and not, lose his footwork immediately, get flustered immediately, just kind of bounce around and not know what to do with himself. You get somebody who makes sure that the easy throws are easy, where somebody's wide open, the ball is going to be in their chest, he's going to be able to lead them. And you also see somebody who actually has some ball placement where he can kind of fit the ball to a left or right side instead of just, throwing it behind or giving the opportunity for the defender to make a play on the ball. And I think with Osweiler, really all you're getting is somebody who's a little bit better at the offense and knows what he's doing a little bit more. And you get somebody who, I guess, will throw the ball quicker. I'm not saying he's a quicker release or he's a great decision maker, but he'll get the ball quicker. And I think whenever it comes to just, like, velocity of the ball, I think they're both kind of similar as far as it comes to arm strength. I know Osweiler throws the ball kind of funky and all that, but he can put some cheese on the ball whenever he wants to, you can say, even if it's not like some of the other quarterbacks in the NFL. And so I guess they each have some strengths and weaknesses in some ways, but I think it's obvious that if you're going to start this week with Savage being healthy and ready to go, Savage should have been the quarterback starting this week too.
Yep, agreed.
Is there anything else that you want to say from this Texans-Titans game?
Just that once again, the defense was asked to do a lot. You saw a lot of unusual numbers on the field, a lot of number 50, number 57, 97, 93. Joel Heath had a solid game. A lot of guys who you don't normally see out on the field. McKinney played a little bit to start the game, but he didn't get as many snaps, so I should probably verify that before I lie to everybody that's listening on the podcast. But the one guy who really showed up for me on Sunday defensively that was just really fun to watch was DJ Reader. He is, with all the talk now that that Vince Wilfork is going to retire, to see the play from DJ Reader that we've seen, is he's clearly showing the ability to step up and play that zero tech in the middle, but he's also showing the ability to play the defensive end position.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting enough penetration to do that. He's been a fun guy to watch this year. He's really developed well, and it's going to be fun. We need to limit his snaps like we need to with Vince Wilfork, but quite frankly, he is so eclipsed Will Fork as far as his play this year that, you know, Will Fork should not even be starting at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like Reader more as a three technique or four eye defensive end than as a nose tackle position. But I'm sure he has a frame where it is also his age where he can put on maybe like 15 or 20 more pounds necessary to play that nose technique. But yeah, I really have enjoyed watching Reader play this year, and he's also one of the guys too from last year's draft that really caught my eye. I know I've been wrong on Tyler Irvin so far. I thought he was gonna be better. I was right in Will Fuller, even though I fell in love with him at the beginning of the year, where he's just been kind of nothing but like a deep threat kind of sideshow because he does drop too many passes deep and loses track of the ball. But yeah, Reader's been a really great surprise for a late round pick for this defense. The only thing I want to add from that game is I love that gift that Luke made of a drunk, Robitussin riddled Titans fan. And also, I love the Titans Hillbilly Raccoon mascot. That's one of my favorite things ever. And also, I was watching the condensed version of the Jaguars-Colts game because I'm a loser. And they mentioned John Riggins at least like five times in that game, comparing him to Frank Gore. And I thought about you every single time they said his name.
Yeah, Lamar Miller, the new John Riggins.
I guess it's Frank Gore is the new John Riggins, which is now Lamar Miller is now the new John Riggins / new Frank Gore / I don't even know who I am anymore.
Yeah, and it's also very stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll talk about this game now. The Raiders are going through their own quarterback problems right now. Matt McGloin is having issues getting healthy after taking a pretty nasty hit against Denver. And so Connor Cook is going to get the start. He was a fourth-round pick, went to Michigan State last year. He was who the Cowboys are going to take instead of Dak Prescott, as everybody has said over and over and over and over and over again in every Cowboys game. And so Oakland took him to stop that from happening. And so what did you see did you watch that Oakland-Denver game? And if so, what did you see the difference in the play between both of those two quarterbacks?
I actually didn't get a chance to watch that game, but I just remember Connor Cook vividly from scouting him last year that he seemed to have the worst arm strength of that entire class. So I'm really interested to see how that's going to play now that teams have tape on him. But he does not have an arm. I think he's going to be very limited with his route trees. That's one thing that popped up. You know, my ears kind of perked up. Connor Cook, guy can't throw. So I'm real interested to see him on Saturday.
Yeah, I watched this game. And what I saw in McGloin is that the guy is just not accurate really at all. Like, he overthrew five different passes in a row. He had guys up and down field, and he was just throwing them way over their heads. And that was even before the injury occurred. He was just scattershotting passes. And everything was really high as well. But with Cook, I don't know. I think arm strength is one of the more overrated things. But I think Cook has really good feet, and he's good in the pocket. And I think he has really good touch on the ball. Like he made some nice throws. Like he made some throws down the sideline that were nice. He was able to find the guys that were open, kind of lead them some. And again, he came when the game was already over. And who knows, how exotic the defense was that Denver was using, how much they were blitzing, those sorts of things. I'll have to go back and watch that. But I think Cook gives Oakland a better chance to win just because he has the accuracy to actually put the ball there. And whenever you're throwing the ball to Crabtree and Cooper, and also with the backfield we saw in their first matchup, you're going to get some guys open here and there. And so as long as you're not being super inaccurate, kind of like Savage, you're making the easy throws easy and they'll fit the ball some places, you can make some things happen. So I think Oakland is better off with Cook starting rather than Matt McGloin, even though Matt McGloin did beat the Texans in 2013, which led to Andre Johnson matchup screaming at each other, which is like mommy and daddy fighting. And I'm really hoping – nobody's done it yet, but I'm really hoping some nerd writes a film study article on that Matt McGloin star from 2013.
That's great. Yeah, I remember that game very vividly from because all the talk was for Matt McGloin. He was where I'm going with it forward is that he's the Bill O'Brien protege. He was part of that system for them. So speaking of mommy daddy, we got daddy and son now.
Yeah, and I remember they were like, well, maybe the Texans made trade for Matt McGloin in the offseason. He's a Bill O'Brien quarterback. But I think that was the offseason they got Mallet there, which is just so stupid. And this is kind of the problem right here for Oakland for this game is that, and also with the postseason in general, is that they're led by their passing attack. This isn't like Houston, who's had one of the worst passing attacks in the NFL this year, who's going from a quarterback who is bad to the worst quarterback in the NFL. They're going from like a top seven quarterback and MVP candidate to who knows what exactly right now. And that was the best part of their team was their passing attack. And yes, I'm going to include their pass blocking as well in there. And so with their passing attack, it was a lot of Carr, not a deal of pressures, playing backyard football, throwing to Crabtree and Cooper, Michael Rivera as well. And without him, they don't really have the talent everywhere else. Like, this team is not going to win because of their defense. They're not – their running game can win games, but, like, that was the key part about this team was their passing attack. And so when you remove Derek Carr and now your passing attack is going from, like, you know, top seven unit to, you know, maybe a 25th unit, do you think this now gives Houston the upper hand against Oakland?
No, I don't. And I think the biggest reason is ultimately because even with the Texans, you know, coming back healthy, getting back, you know, somewhat healthy Clowney, and one who's, you know, rested, and getting McKinney's going to play the whole game. He only played like 30% of the snaps on Sunday. The big difference is that Oakland's offensive line is just so much better than our trash heap of an offensive line. The Oakland Raiders, you know, we talked about it when we played them earlier this season. They're willing to do unorthodox things. They're willing to put in six, you know, offensive linemen to keep their guys up. Yeah, to keep their guys upright. And they're going to do that again this game. So, you know, we can talk about a lot. Okay, I mean, here's the stat. Here's the big stat for them. They led the league in the least number of sacks and led an adjusted sack rate, Oakland did. So they will keep their quarterback clean. They will make it hard for us to get to their quarterback. And I think that's ultimately the difference between the two. I don't think there's going to be a ton of difference between Connor Cook and Brock Osweiler's play. But as long as our offensive line is trash and their offensive line is so good, I think that's ultimately the difference maker.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think if you're kind of doing one of those, like, checks, you know, who has the advantage thing, I think I agree with that, too. Like, their offensive line's better, and then the passing attacks are going to probably somewhat even and be a wash now. They should be able to run the ball about the same just because the Texans' run defense is a lot better than Oakland's. And on the defense side of the ball, too, the Texans' pass rush and Oakland's pass rush is Houston's isn't as good as Oakland's. But their secondary is so much better. And so it's kind of weird where, like, if you go through and just do, like, you know, plus or, you know, checks or X's in every single aspect of this team, like, you're all over the place. And it kind of evens out in a strange way, too. So I think without you know, Derek Carr, these teams are kind of just really evenly matched. And it's going to be, again, I'm going to say this, like, 17 times. It's going to be, like, a really close, you know, kind of 2017 sort of game because of that.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that. And I think ultimately it's going to come down to that Brock Osweiler at some point in time will need to make some throws. Now the question is, can he make those throws?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we'll continue with Oakland's offense too. And so they're going to do what Houston does. They're going to run the ball a lot. And like the Texans, they run the ball up the middle. They're first in the league in carries up the middle, 288, which is, you know, the most in the league. And they average 4.58 yards a carry, which is fourth in the NFL. And then if you look at the rest of their run carry, tree, you can call it. They're 31st in carries over left end, 30th in carries over the left tackle, which they're very good. Donald Penn's a great run blocker. They're 30th in carries over the right tackle, and they're 31st in carries over the right end. So do you think Bernard McKinney, Brian Cushing, and Vince Wilfork can stifle this inside rush attack?
It's going to be tough. That's going to be a really tough matchup because they're big bodies. This is another game. If we have J.J. Watt healthy, and instead we're relying upon, you know, a lot of Christian Covington, a lot of Joel Heath, I would like our chances a lot more. But it's not a great matchup. Now, I'm not saying it's a poor matchup for us, but it's not a great matchup for us because they're going to put six offensive linemen. They're going to use a fullback, and they have a lot of talent in their running back core that can make plays. They can get loose in the open field and do things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, over left tackle where Donald Penn blocks, they average 6.24 yards a carry, which is second in the NFL. And, I mean, the last time they played, Houston did a really good job bottling up Oakland's running attack. The one thing, though, is it was a lot of McKinney, and it was a lot of Jadeveon Clowney. And so I know I wrote that film article after that game was over. And I also looked at the San Diego game, too, but mainly specifically that game. Like, Clowney wasn't necessarily – he was making some tackles in the backfield, but he was just blowing up their power plays. He was chasing pullers whenever they were pulling away from him. He was taking on double teams. He was driving tight ends into the backfield. He was ripping past men like Watson. And so he kind of single-handedly just obliterated the Raiders' rushing attack. And so I know we talked about it this year a lot whenever we were talking about his performance against, like, San Diego or against the Colts or against the Jaguars, where he was having these really great games. And we were saying, well, remember the context. These aren't good offensive lines. But, again, like, the Oakland game was the best game I think he's had this year. And so do you think he's going to be able to have the same sort of impact he had in their first matchup earlier this year?
Unless the Raiders are really stupid, no. If you're not game planning for this now, if you're not ready for what he's going to do to your run attack, if you're not going to get multiple bodies on him and get some help blocking him. But I can't imagine that the Raiders aren't going to be a lot more ready for how Clowney's been playing this part of the season. He is still going to give Menelik Watson hell. And that's because Menelik Watson's not a good offensive lineman. He's really not. He is the weak link on that offensive line. So unless the Raiders are really stupid, then I don't think that Clowney can possibly have the same game because he's going to have more bodies against them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is a game that Clowney goes from being good to great, and he's able to take on multiple bodies like we've seen J.J. Watt do his entire career. He's able to take on multiple bodies and still stack and shed and get to the ball carrier. Maybe this is that game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know with their offensive line. I think the first time they played, I believe either Gabe Jackson or Kalecki Ozemele was out. And I believe it was Ozemele. I can't remember off the top of my head.
It was beforehand. It was.
Ozemele. Okay, and that was big for him. And also, whenever Austin Howard is their right tackle, Watson's like their 6'7" offensive lineman. And they all, he's not good. He's just really big and scary, but he's not good. And then they also have an undrafted free agent. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, which I'm sad about because I wrote this article on them. But he's like 345 pounds, and they also like to use him as a sixth offensive lineman too. And so you're going to see a lot of heavy sets from Oakland. You're going to see a lot of these seven offensive lineman sets. You're going to see a lot of fullbacks. And I think the biggest thing they're going to do differently is they're not going to run away from Clowney. They're going to run over the left tackle a lot more, and they're going to try to get Gabe Jackson and Adal Penn going up against Clowney and making sure that he was not going to be able to beat them. I think they're going to run a lot more inside zone too. They won't run as many power plays because, again, Clowney, if you want to pull at him, he'll throw the puller into the running back. If you want to pull away from him, he's able to cut across the tight end and get it backfield that quickly and make those plays on the ball. And so I'm expecting a lot of inside zone runs up the middle. I'm expecting a lot of them mainly going to the left-hand side. I'm expecting a lot of these big, heavy formations too for Oakland's game plan.
I can't remember which game it was, but the game where he threw the puller into the running back, and that was
that was
the tackle on the play.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was fantastic.
Yeah, that was against Hunter Henry, and that was, like, my favorite play I've seen this year. My two favorite Clarion plays are that one and against the Patriots last year when he Deacon Jones, the left tackle, and then spun past the guard to sack Tom Brady, too. But, yeah, that was just something I've never seen before, just using the blocker as a bowling ball. And it was also into Melvin Gordon, who's a really great player on his own also. And so I guess the next thing, so if this is – I know this is what I think Oakland's game plan is going to be. They have won two games on the ground like this. When they beat Denver in week 9, they ran the ball for 200-plus yards. They threw for less than 200. And then also when they beat Indy, they ran for 250 and threw for 200 also. And so, like, is this the type of game against Houston's run defense where Oakland can win just by running the ball 40 times and collecting 200-plus yards on the ground with an occasional Connor Cook throw?
I think that possibility exists. I definitely do. It would be hard to discount it at all because this is a team they're planning for it. They know this is what they're going to have to do to be successful. I can see that this is entirely the game plan, that we're just going to pound the ball at Houston. The one thing that really worries me about this game, amongst all the other things, is how many snaps the defense has seen, how much time the defense has stayed on the field. And they've been so resilient all season. They've been able to get up and go take more shots and get up and go take more shots. So what I'm worried about is this the game where they just don't have anything left to give if Oakland's running the ball 40-plus times. So that's I'm greatly concerned about that aspect of this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that too. I think it's also regarding that part, whenever you look at Houston's run defense, I have the numbers right here. They are 12th on runs against the left edge, 7th on runs over left tackle, 14th on runs at the middle, 29th on runs over right tackle, which is at, you know, Christian Covington, you know, Joel Heath's spot, and they're 14th on runs against the edge. And so this has gone from like the 20th best run defense to, I think they're 12th in DVOA now, run defensive DVOA. And whenever you look at just yards per carry, they're about average. And so I think if like if Oakland is really moving guys, I think this is the type of game that they can win just based off the ground. But it's not like a super big advantage. It's going to – Connor Cook is going to have to make some things happen, or Brock Oswald is going to have to make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah. That's certainly a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one thing I wanted to mention, too, is that Carl Joseph is back for the Raiders, and he had been hurt this year. He was playing some really good ball at the end of – or before he got hurt. He really was starting to really pick up his play. That's worrisome. Is all of a sudden now you've got, you know, Oakland getting a clutch guy healthy and taking over for a guy who is not good. And so that's just another, you know, worry spot for that team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to talk about Joseph and Reggie Nelson and Sean Smith, especially here in a second. And then also last time the two teams played, you know, Jonathan Joseph, Kareem Jackson, Quinn Demps, A.J. Bouye, they really liked on the Raiders' passing offense, except for those two big plays. And, yeah, I didn't see Andre Howell because, again, that touchdown all of all he had for 75 yards was all on Andre Howell. And it was also kind of similar games that they had against San Diego and Green Bay and also Detroit, where they went against these, you know, really great quarterbacks, these really great passing attacks, and really held strong. And so is this matchup even important at all? Like, are you worried at all about Crabtree, Cooper, you know, breaking anything deep? Are you worried about those same big plays that kind of played them? Or just because it's kind of cooked back there, that you're just saying it's, if Oakland's going to win, it's going to be because of the ground game?
The biggest matchup that worries me is Amari Cooper, just because he's so fast. He's able to jet, you know, quickly, get to top speed and make things happen. I think he's the sort of guy, and I kind of have flashbacks to the Dolphins game last year, where they would be able to get the guy, you know, ball to, who's that guy? What's that guy's name? He was number 26 for the Dolphins. Oh, that's right, Lamar Miller, where the Dolphins could get him in space and have him do things after the catch with the ball. And this is the sort of game that also terrifies me with that, you know, Andre Howell's not a great tackler. Amari Cooper is a huge guy. Quentin Demps is slow. So there's definitely a possibility that they break off some big plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think they're going to be – the secondary's be good for 98% of this game. I'm just still worried because whenever you have Cooper and you have Crabtree, you're always kind of worried about those plays. But I have complete faith the secondary is going to hold them down for the majority of the game, especially with Connor Cook back there. I do think you're going to see a lot more screens from Oakland, too. And again, I think it's a lot with Tavius Murray at the ground. I think DeAndre Washington is going to get a lot more snaps, too. He's been great these last 2 weeks with Derek Carr out. And so, you know, like, I think it's like if you're Oakland's formula, it's going to be make sure you take advantage whenever Brock Osweiler makes mistakes. Make sure you run the ball up the middle well. Do as much as you can to scheme to double team and hit Clowney as often as possible. And then run some screen plays. And then just make sure that you're – and then hope that you get, like, one or two big Cooper or Crabtree plays to kind of break – you know, to have those, like, two good drives necessary to beat Houston this one.
Yeah, you got to think that's the strategy, is you're just going to just pound the ball, hope that the other team – hope your – you know, the Texans defense gets tired. I think that's a realistic possibility that they do get tired, and that with a lot of guys hitting them and a lot of running the ball and a lot of ball control offense that – I think that they have a good chance to be very effective at that.
Mm-hmm. And I also, if they get a lead too, if they can get a lead and then force Houston, make sure that Brock Osweiler throws the ball, you know, 40 times or whatever, and they can, you know, really stick to their running game and keep chewing the clock. If they get like even, I think if they get a 10-point, if any of these teams get a 10-point lead, I think this game is over. Especially even more so for Houston with just the problems they've had, you know, throwing the ball too. So. Is there anything else that you're looking for whenever the Texans are on defense in this one?
Yeah, I mean, that's 10 points. That's 4 field goals. I mean, that's hard, you know, to get that many possessions to get down the field that far. No, nothing else on this side of the ball.
Okay. So the Raiders defense has been bad this year. They've given up 20.5 points a game, which is 20th. They're 23rd in DVOA, 25th against the pass, and 18th against the run. And so what holes do you see are available to exploit this Raiders defense?
I think clearly the secondary is, well, oh, hey, we've got Brock Osweiler at quarterback. Secondary is where they're weak. So unfortunately, that aspect of that matchup. they're 18th against the run, as you mentioned, so they're not quite as bad against the run. Khalil Mack and Bruce Irvin are much better at getting to the pass rusher than they are playing the run. I really think that this is a game where we're going to need the offensive line to step up, not be a train wreck like it was on Sunday. And they were terrible on Sunday. That offensive line was absolutely abhorrent on Sunday. They're going to need to play better. I think the most important thing is that they're going to need to scheme better. I keep hoping that our offensive scheme of running Lamar Miller up the back of our offensive lineman all season has just been a 16-game-long troll by Bill O'Brien to see how much he can piss me off, and he's actually going to whip out something intelligent in the playoffs. So that's my greatest hope right now for our run offense. Because I've got no hope for the pass offense. I just don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I've started watching film for this big old stupid film thing working on Friday, and I've kind of seen three things so far. The first is the Raiders have really bad inside linebackers. Malcolm Smith, and the other guy, they both don't react to plays quickly. They're blocked very easily, and also they just don't have the quickness to cover. C.J. Fedorowicz had a lot of success against Malcolm Smith. And not even, running great routes, but just, running into him and stopping and catching the ball and breaking a tackle and going. And so I think this is going to be a big game for C.J. Fedorowicz and Ryan Griffin. The Raiders are 23rd in DVOA covering tight ends. They have a DVOA 28.7% covering the short middle part of the field. The average in the NFL this year is 5.7%. They allow 9.9 yards an attempt. They have 9.1 touchdown interception ratio, and these are all on short middle throws. And they give the completion percentage of 70.4% on these short throws. And so it's not even just the tight ends. It's getting Will Fuller in the slot. It's getting Andre Hopkins in the slot. It's getting your skilled players against linebackers in coverage, especially the short middle part of the field. And then also running crossing routes are really good against this defense too. And making sure that Osweiler gets these quick, easy throws and maybe potentially can set up some deeper throws downfield. The second one is exactly what you mentioned when it comes to their scheme, especially their run game. I know we've talked about it so long this year, and it's kind of gotten a little bit better as the year has gone on when it comes to where their carries have been. But they're still second in the league in carries up the middle. But they're 16th over left tackle now, 12th over the right end. So they're running more in some other ways. But the Raiders' rush defense, they're 31st on yards per carry on the left edge, which is 7.26 yards a carry. And they're 27th on carries over the right end, which is 6.09 yards a carry. The one spot that's hard running against is, again, Khalil Mack. And so in their run defense, they don't really have any skill players at all, except for Mack. You can run the middle on them. You run against the right side. As long as you're not allowing Khalil Mack to chase or Bruce Irvin to chase and you're blocking them okay and getting outside, you can have success too. And then the other is just throwing at Sean Smith. Sean Smith has been terrible this year. He can't press. He'll play 10 yards off and just give you short stuff over and over again. And he just hasn't done anything. He has had no break on the ball. He's just been abhorrent for him too. And so I think whenever you see you're going to throw the ball outside at all, you want to look for Sean Smith. But you're going to mainly focus on the slot, the middle, and just try and get the ball outside as much as possible.
Yeah, and I saw that you had Sean Smith in the script, so I wasn't going to talk about him. But he is – I don't know the best way to explain Sean Smith. He's got to be one of the most erratic cornerbacks in the league, where he can go one game looking like an absolute superstar and – turn into toast the next game. He is just so horribly inconsistent.
Yeah, and he was really bad to start the season off, too. I know Atlanta and New Orleans both just torched him. He got benched, played a little bit better in the middle of the year. But against San Diego, he was really bad. Against Houston, he was kind of quiet there as well, too. But he's somebody that they need to attack and throw at.
Yeah, and I want to say just one thing about Malcolm Smith, because he's fun to pick on because he's a really bad football player. But who was it? I can't remember who it was last week that he ran down a guy from behind during the game last week. It was just pretty – it was like watching Clowney, but watching, 53 running down a 20-something was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I guess, the first time these two teams played, Osweiler had a pretty good game. And they might have been the best game he's had so far this year. And so what's going to keep him to have success in this football game?
not sucking. The key is, I think the key is ultimately going to be is control his passes. And by that, what I mean is that don't force him to make passes he's not going to be successful making. So if you want to go deep a couple times, try to open up the offense, fine. But limit his route tree to short to mid-term throws. If we whip out a bunch of screens and get Will Fuller involved, great. Get CJF involved, great. I think those would be good things. I think, anything we can do to get DeAndre Hopkins the ball, even though Brock Osweiler sucks at getting DeAndre Hopkins the ball, those would also be good things to do. But we can't expect Brock Osweiler to convert 3rd and 7. And I don't think it's worth it to even try to convert 3rd and 7. If we run those stupid delayed handoffs on 3rd and 7 all game, that's really going to be the safest plan. Because do you really want Brock Osweiler trying to force the ball downfield on our own 30-yard line? So, as much as I hate Bill O'Brien's extreme tendency towards extreme conservatism as a play caller, this is the only chance I think we have on Sunday is just to basically take the ball out of Brock's hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, like I said, I think the key is going to be throwing the ball in the middle of the field. He had some success at that in the first matchup, and like the members I just talked about earlier, what I've seen on film so far, is just throwing the ball in the middle of the field is going to be key. And, Osweiler's been okay throwing the ball in the middle of the field, and mainly because, geometry, it's a shorter throw, it's an easier throw. And so they can create those open throws to center field. That's important, too. And again, the other one is just not throwing any interceptions. And they can make sure that this is a longer game as far as making sure that Oakland has long fields they have to go through and just not making these stupid mistakes. That's been very important, too. And I think that's also interesting about Oakland as well is they do a pretty good job of running man-zone hybrids where you're going to see a guy play man or be in man coverage and just letting his guy go by him and cutting him the ball. You'll also see them drop into you'll see a lot of cover on Robert as well, too. And so, the Raiders are going to try to bring Reggie Nelson down into the field some, too. Carl Joseph is very quick, and he's good at this also. And just kind of disguising your schemes where you think it's zone coverage, but they're actually – you're running man, or you think it's man, and they're having a guy peel back in zone there, too, to force Osweiler mistakes. I know Osweiler threw two really bad dropped interceptions in their first matchup that the Raiders can capitalize on. And so, Oakland – they're going to need to catch the interceptable passes, so they should come. Osweiler's thrown two or three every single game, and Oakland's going to need to make sure that they catch these passes and take advantage of every turnover opportunity that they have whenever they do occur, and whenever they actually – if they actually catch, and make sure they score on those drives too.
Yeah, and there's so much – there's kind of so many things, all the drop interceptions, Is this the game – they stop becoming drops? This is the game that the defense gets tired. Mm-hmm. Is this a game that Brock finally throws that pick six I've been rooting for all year? And I think this is, is that this game that one of those things happened? Because it seems like we've been staving off those kinds of plays all year, even though, Brock was, amongst the league leaders in interceptions. But I'm really interested to see how that whole thing is going to play out on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we also saw about his problems with the pass rush this year, too. And at the beginning of the year, it didn't seem like he really had problems with the pass rush. It just seemed like how big his body was. Just like him making normal movements just seemed so much more exaggerated in the pocket. But then as you watch him play more and more, he is very skittish. Like, he overreacts to pressure. He doesn't step up when he should. He turns and run when he shouldn't. He steps up in the pocket when he shouldn't at all, which leads to, the other defensive end coming to make plays with the ball, too. And so the Raiders really have, they have two pass rushers. They have Cleo Mack, who's one of the best in the league. And then how do you think Houston can contain them or what they're going to do to contain them? And then are you worried about Bruce Irvin at all in this one?
Worried about I think you have to be worried about both of them. Irvin's very quick. This is not our offensive line is not really made for that type of guy at this point in time. Dwayne Brown really doesn't handle speed rushers as well as he has in the past. So you have to be terrified of those two guys. If what I've seen, which is problematic to me, is our offensive scheme doesn't like to use chips very much, and I'm a big fan of chips. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see that utilized a lot more. Let C.J. Griffin hit Khalil Mack on the way on the release. Let him hit him. Just stick a hand out there. Just be a pain in the butt. even those little things like that can give your offensive lineman an extra half second to get ready for the blow that you're going to get from Cleo Mack. So I would like to see a lot more of that on Sunday. Are we going to do that? I don't think so, because it's not something we really have done historically as a team. I think if you're going to use Lamar Miller, you could use him the same way, chipping guys. So I would like to see that. Not counting on it, but that's what I would like to see. I think that's how you handle the speed rushers like Irvin and Mack, is you just be a pain in the butt to them. And make this, you know, obviously don't let them get one-on-one matchups, but even a chip is an extra half second for Brock Osweiler to make a play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, their first matchup, Dwayne Brown really handled Khalil Mack really well. Khalil Mack was trying
really
to
well. He
rush
did.
It. Yeah, he did. I mean, he did a fantastic job against them. And so Bruce Irvin, I think he's an overrated pass rusher. What he's really good at, again, the first step. If he gets he has to get the first step on a tackle. If he doesn't, he's not strong enough to really bull rush at all. If he gets that first step, he's able to rip. He's great at that. He's also really good at chasing plays from behind as well, where he just purely uses his speed. But he's not like a really technically sound pass rusher. And so whenever I completely agree with you. I think whenever you have Chris Clark on like third down or second and long, you have to put C.J. Fedorowicz or Ryan Griffin. And not like at the tight end position, but just have them stamp in the slot, and they need a chip. They need to make sure to help out Chris Clark as much as possible, because he's had a lot more issues in the later part of the year than whenever he first took over for Darren Newton. So I think that's going to be key. I think Brown can handle Irving Mack on his own really well. But again, like if you're in the third down, you want to make sure that you try to help out as much as possible. And then also when it comes to Brown, you can't wait and see how it kind of play it out. If it's in the first quarter, he's getting beat over and over again, you have to chip there. But I think throughout the game, you should chip for Clark. And then the other thing you see with them, too, is that their pass rush is going to come from the exterior with either Irvin or Mack, or it's not going to come. And then if it comes up the middle, it's going to be because of stunts. They don't have any defensive linemen who can rush the interior well, but Mack's a really great stunner. Irvin's a good stunner. And if you're going to get – they're getting pressure of the A and B gap, it's going to be because of stunts. And the Texans have had problems, you know, communicating and picking those plays off, especially Sufio. That's one of his big problems is there. You know, Jeff Allen's really slow. He has problems there too. And so it's going to be key for, you know, Manx and those guards to keep their heads up, make sure they know when to switch, and then also pop some guys on the side too to stop those interior rushes.
Yeah, and one thing I would be really surprised about on – Saturday is if we don't see Khalil Mack lining up differently than just over Dwayne Brown, if we see him lining up over Chris Clark more often. That's one thing that I kind of noted in the first matchup is, you know, that's your number one exploit. If you're the Raiders, that's your number one target. It's like the scene in The Waterboy, you know, right before the onside kickoff and the ending, you know, at the bowl game where the kicker said, point at him, there's my B word. And that's what if I'm the Raiders, that's what I'm doing. I'm saying, hey, there's my weakest link right there, baby. I'm going to go get this guy.
Yeah, and that is a great point, too. I think you could even use Mack as a three technique sum and have him against Jeff Allen, have Irvin against Clark, and just screw the rest of the side, because Osweiler's a right-handed quarterback. You're not really all that worried about him rolling out and trying to throw across his body. And which maybe even what you kind of welcome, too. So I think there's a lot of different things they can do to take advantage of the Texans' right side of their offensive line, which is one of the worst right side offensive lines in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think we're really going to see how imaginative the Raiders are going to get, because I think the Texans' offensive line is so easily exploitable, and it's going to be interesting if they don't take advantage of those exploits, those holes that we've got on the offensive line much better than what they did. Go ahead.
And also for the run game too, you know, we talked about also like get Lamar Miller outside the tackles, get him on the edge. That has to happen. But I do think the Texans can have success running the ball up the middle too. The key, it's kind of counterintuitive for them, because their problem since last year has been blocking the second level and sticking on the second level. But the Raiders' inside linebackers are so bad that that's kind of a given. They should be able to do that. I think the key is going to be sticking on their first level blocks and making sure that their defensive tackle is not able to, you know, kind of reach out and grab Lamar Miller after 3 yards whenever he has the opportunity for, you know, 10 or 12 there. And so really, really sticking on those, that defensive tackles, you know, Mac's a really hard block, but everybody else aside from Mac, sticking on those guys because you're going to be able to block the second level against this Raiders team and then make sure and then hope that Lamar Miller makes some safety miss too. So I think on the ground, it's going to be good enough to win this game for Houston too. And it's going to come down to, like we talked about earlier, Osweiler throwing the ball in the middle of the field and just not making mistakes.
I think that's ultimately the key to victory is limiting what Brock Osweiler does, letting him make the safe plays, and not asking him to make a single play for you. That's the last thing you want is for him to try to make a play. Tell him before the game starts, if you do this, I'm going to put in Shane Leckler quarterback, and we're going to do it the right way.
Or Brad Whedon. I think the best metaphor for it is that you want Brock Osweiler not to crack the eggs that's in the bowl because there's going to be a ton of shell, but you give him the little fork and say, you stir these eggs up, I'm going to go, you know, take a piss real fast, and I'll come back and wash my hands, and we'll you know, cook this up. And just making sure, like you said, just limit what he does in this offense. And even if you do that, he still isn't so bad at making dumb decisions, making bad passes, that he can still end up screwing this one up. But from the perspective of your Bill O'Brien, you have to make sure that you do that as much as possible.
Yep, I agree.
And when Houston's on offense, is there anything else that you're looking forward to here? Are you looking at, you know, DeAndre Hopkins against DJ Hayden? Is there anything else that you're looking for whenever the Texans are on offense?
I would really like to see us try, again, going back to the theme of short passes, I'd really like to see us try to take advantage of Will Fuller's speed much more than we have so far this year. I really, you know what, let's throw some screens, okay? Let's just do it, and let's see what happens. And I think that would also give us a chance. Give him a chance to break a play. If you want to make a big play in this game, I think that's the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of wish Will Fuller played for the Chiefs. I think he would be so much better there than Houston. I'm not having more words at all on the offense. And really, kind of the last thing that I know we haven't talked about as much as we should have when it comes to these previews and stuff is that the Oakland has an advantage in the kicking game. And again, the Texans are 32nd special teams DVOA. Do you think the special teams are going to have an impact in this game at all?
Special teams always have an impact on games. Everything we talked about so far, if you want to put like a weighting that offense is 40%, defense is 40%, and special teams is 20% of your team strength, that's a big lopsided victory for the Raiders with 20%. You know, they're taking all 20 of that percent because our special teams are so bad. If Tyler Irvin is returning punts, we're doing it wrong because he is terrible.
Yeah, Fuller needs to return punts for sure in this game.
I would stick with Keem Hunt. I mean, I would put Hunt out there. He can make plays. He's going to make the catches for you. He's not going to terrify you every time the ball is in the air. I'm not a big fan of using my big guys for returning punts. Maybe this is an exception game for that, but either one of those guys is a far better choice than Tyler Irvin. Tyler Irvin should not even be dressing on a weekly basis.
Yeah. I just think with Fuller is that you have the opportunity to break one. And I think you're going to have to try to find scores however you can, just for this offense in general. And so, do you have anything else, or are you ready to make your prediction in this one?
I'm ready to make my prediction.
Well, so for the Cecil Shorts Memorial Pick'em Contest, I'm 10-5, you're 9-6. I'm going to go back through and this week and try to figure out where that other game has come from that we're missing in here. But I think it was one that we both got right too. So I'm one game up on you because you correctly picked the Titans last week. And so who do you have in this one?
Well, put on your shock face, people. Oakland Raiders, 13. Your Houston Texans, 16. I think just the home field advantage alone is enough to turn this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have Houston 19, and I have them winning 19-16. And I think it's just going to be – I think the Texans are better everywhere else than Oakland is one part of it. And, I mean, I think it's such a 50-50 game. I think it's a coin toss game. It's going to be close. It's going to be a one-possession game. And, these teams are just – it's so weird because again, they're better at so many different things than the other one. There's no, like, real continuity in their strengths. And it's so up and down. We don't know necessarily what to expect from Connor Cook. We don't know, you know, if these passes Brock Osweiler throws can be intercepted. We don't know how the Texans are actually going to be able to take advantage of Houston's Oakland's deficiencies well. And just, like, overall performance, I just think they met, like, it's just so close. And the Texans won a bunch of close games this year, which is really just – yeah, which is just gambler's fallacy at this point. But I think it's been close. I think Houston is just a little bit better everywhere else, and they win by 3 points.
Yeah, and if Derek Carr is playing this game, I'm taking the Raiders.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm taking the Raiders by 10 points if Derek Carr is playing.
Right.
at least. And so we still have some more time. We're going to make some playoff picks also. But we also have two viewer questions as well, too. And then one kind of, like, really weird macro – your stripe thing. And so there's a rumor stripe between Bill O'Brien and Rick Smith all year. There is a Houston Chronicle report, or a report came out somewhere, that if the Texans lose to the Raiders this week, O'Brien may be dismissed, or he may leave, or he may be fired. And so what do you think is going to happen to the Texans if they do lose this game?
If we do, so we're going to open up the can of worms here, which, and also refer to the radio report today about, you know, the fact, as it was kind of stated, that Bill O'Brien and Rick Smith don't get along. And we've talked about that obliquely quite a bit on BRR. We have heard things as well. I'll just be very honest that we've heard things about their relationship for a while now. I think the biggest issue is you go back to the Brock Osweiler signing. And I've been saying, we have been saying for a while now, this really looked like a Rick Smith signing. Did not look like a Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien has not treated the signing as something he was bought into at all year. He has just completely been, I mean, the very first thing he said about Brock Osweiler, he's big and he can take a hit. I mean, if you just signed a quarterback for $11 billion, you at least want to talk about something that a quarterback brings to the table rather than he's a giant giraffe that's hard to tackle. So we've seen a disconnect between Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien all year, and so it's kind of coming to a head. And I like what Dammit Dan said. This team feels like a 6-10 team on the outside, you know, more than an actual playoff team. You're not wrong, and the Pythagorean standings say you're not wrong either, because we have a negative points differential. You know, we were at the third worst points differential at one point this year. So it's a team that is so weird in a lot of different ways it's hard to say that this is a truly, you know, kind of playoff championship level team, because we just are such an ugly team. And I think it goes back to the quarterback situation, Bill O'Brien, Rick Smith, Brock Osweiler. The rumors to me make a lot of sense, right? There is a disconnect between those two, that Rick Smith is, you know, exercising alpha power over Bill O'Brien because, hey, Rick Smith, you know, he might have felt like he gave too much power to Gary Kubiak and Wade Phillips over the years, and that, you know, he is asserting himself as a talented GM. And I could see that scenario, you know, as a man, as a human, I can see him, you know, kind of asserting that. So a lot of it, these rumors unfortunately do make a lot of sense. So getting back to your question, what do I think happens if the Texans lose? What I think happens is I think Bill O'Brien's out peace no matter what. I do not have the feeling his entire shrug emoji over Brock Osweiler situation tells me a lot, that he's not bought into it. He's not there emotionally with this team at this point. So I think he's out. I think he's going to take a job that he will have more power, especially at the personnel side. Another big deal is that, you know, he's kind of reaching lame duck status as a coach. He probably doesn't like that either. You know, there has been almost no talk about re-upping his contract. Of course, we're talking about, you know, the Houston Texans, who are the, you know, KGB of keeping secrets in the NFL. So there's a lot of variables at play here. And fortunately, a lot of the bad ones make a lot of sense. So I do think that if we lose, I think Bill O'Brien's gone. I think at a minimum, Bill O'Brien's gone, because if you're Uncle Bob McNair and you're seeing, you know, these things happening, and none of these have really been secret. That's the funny thing, is these have kind of been out there to see. You just had to pay attention. that Rick Smith is not a good general manager, that Bill O'Brien is not a good head coach, that you might need to make changes in both of those areas. So I think it's going to be very interesting what happens if we lose on Saturday. If we win on Saturday, however, does that mean everybody's going to sit in a circle and play kumbaya and smoke a bunch of pot and paint things on each other's nude bodies? I don't know. Maybe it does. Winning always builds chemistry, right? So I just don't see that happening either, even if we win on Sunday. There's too many disconnects between the power structure between Bill O'Brien and Rick Smith. And if you're Bill O'Brien, if you want to coach an NFL team where you can't even choose your own personnel, I wouldn't. I mean, if my manager's forcing me to use Brock Osweiler, I'm looking at him going, no, dude, that's stupid. So you wouldn't put yourself in that kind of professional risk like that. So I've talked a long time. I'm going to shut up now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think I never thought Brock Osweiler was a pure Rick Smith signing. I thought it was both of them reaching inclusion. I also thought it was also Bill O'Brien, I thought, had a huge input on it. Just because you look at all the quarterbacks he's had before here, they've been smart, excellent England guys who already know the system, or they're tall, white guys with strong arms. And Brock Osweiler is a tall, white guy with a strong arm. He's no different than Brian Mallett. He's no different than Tom Savage. They're the type of quarterback that he likes, because that's what I think one of the problems with this organization whenever they evaluate quarterbacks is that they put too much emphasis on, you know, build and height and size, and also on, you know, arm strength, which there's so many other more important factors to that too. And so I never felt that way, but I do think that if Rick Smith made this decision without being 100% on board that with Bill O'Brien, it was such an important decision. It was so much money for 2 years where, like, instead of going all in on your defense or your offensive line, your running attack, and trying to build maybe a top 10 defense of all time, like sign Muhammad Wilkerson or Jonathan Hankins for, you know, at nose tackle, making a decision like that, where you could have really invested in your defense and try to build a top 10 defense of all time, and then just said, hey, you know, Hoyer can be average, and with the defense being this good, we'll be fine. And you weren't able to do that by signing Osweiler. And so I think that if they were on the same page 100% together and they made this decision and Bill O'Brien didn't like him, I think that's a cataclysmic failure, because you have so much talent on this team and it's being wasted because they still haven't found a quarterback. And if you're not on the same page with such an important decision, I don't know if either, you know, Bill O'Brien isn't the right coach, or if that's you know, Rick Smith is. You know, I think Rick Smith should potentially be fired for that, and I think he may even want to start over, you know, completely new again. And it just goes to, you know, this has been a talented team since, you know, 2008, and although the wins aren't there and the division titles aren't there, and like, this team has really morphed into something else. They have still hit in the first round. They've still been able to have a lot of talent, and they should be better than where they're at right now. And then that's just where this all kind of comes down to, where it's frustrating that we're talking about the Texans maybe beating a third-string quarterback against a team with a bad defense because of how bad their quarterback play, and that's where it all stems from. When it comes to what's going to happen, I don't think whether they win or not should change this decision at all. I think if you're going to make this decision, it should be made because this team played very badly this year. And that kind of leads to this question from Texan Army, said, what is the future of this team? And I think the only thing that really worries me is that I think this team is due for a big regression next year. I think we're going to see a team that's going to win, you know, 6 games, 7 games, unless the quarterback play improves, or if J.J. Watt just dramatically improves things, because the whole division is going to be better next year too. And so I'm worried about that happening and Bill O'Brien getting fired midseason, and then they're trying to scramble for a coach. Or I'm also worried about Bill O'Brien going somewhere else and then them bringing a different head coach who automatically becomes ostracized and hated, because look at the drop-off in wins when the drop-off was probably imminent anyways. And so that's the kind of thing. I don't think the expectations are ever going to really meet reality with this kind of situation we're staring at right now.
No, I think that's a really great point to make as well, is if you bring in a new coach with all the – we were a very lucky team this year. We did look a lot more like a 6-10 team than a 9-7
team. In the NFL this year.
Yeah, and so the regression is inevitable. So it's a little bit scary. I think that, you know, I don't think you bring in a new offensive coordinator and all of a sudden the offensive scheme becomes better. I don't think that happens, because this is Bill O'Brien's offense. And so if you think you can bring in who was it? That Chan Gailey, who retired, quote unquote, today. He just wanted to avoid the axe. But, you know, if you bring in Chan Gailey to run the offense, is that really going to improve your team? Is he going to get a pass from Bill O'Brien to run the offense how he wants to run it? I don't think so. I don't think at all. I think Bill O'Brien wants to pee on everything to make sure it's his, and he owns it. And if you're a head coach, I don't blame him. Okay. So, you know, I don't know how we get a happy ending from this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what you just said is kind of key here, is it just seems like no matter what's going to happen, it doesn't seem like it's going to end well at all. I think next year is going to be a bad year next year. And then when you're adding this on top of these management issues and problems, it seems like it too. So I don't know. Next question we have is from Renee Rogers, who said, well, we may be a Raiders team of third-string quarterback with our overpaid backup from Denver, so one more possible win and a butt-kicking at the hands of the Patriots is more than likely what's going to happen. Why is this worth being excited for? And I guess it just kind of goes back to the preview, you know, where we're sitting here talking, we're picking out all the different pieces of this Raiders defense, of their offense. And I don't know, I guess it's kind of what I'm excited for, because I think playoff football, no matter who's playing, there's so many fun little things in there. It's like this weekend, next weekend is the best weekend of the year, and you always want your team to make the playoffs. Like, you want your team to be good, and you should be happy to make the playoffs, even if they're playing poorly. And so it's just worth enjoying. Enjoy it. Enjoy that the Texans are here, even though that they were the luckiest team in the NFL this year. But enjoy it. Who knows the next time it's going to happen. And like, regardless of the talent of these two teams and Derek Carr's injury, there's still a lot of little fun things within this matchup that, you know, there is to look forward to and watch in it to be excited for as well.
Yeah, and I'm going to point to the fact that just watch the defense. Look, if you want to – I had more than one game have I just kind of escaped to the kitchen for a little bit and gotten some food together while the offense was on the field, but I won't miss a snap the defense plays. I absolutely refuse to. So just watch the defense and enjoy it. Just look at Romeo Crennel's work of art that he throws out there week in, week out. Watch Bernardrick McKinney and Whitney Merciless stunt. These are the sorts of things to watch to really enjoy the game. Watch A.J. Bouye ball. Watch C.J. Reeder, you know, eating souls in the middle of the field. That's what you want to watch, and that's what makes the game enjoyable for me. You just have to ignore the offense. Just pretend it's not happening and rock back and forth and cover your head and say it's not happening, it's not happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think the New England game is going to be fun because I think it's just going to be fun to watch. Like, it all builds up to this moment. You just watch them get destroyed. And I really hope, like, Bill Belichick just starts Jacoby Brissett instead or makes him, like, the captain for that game, too, after what happened earlier this year. But yeah, like, enjoy the game. It's not gonna be like exciting, but it's gonna be fun. It's always fun when the Texans win the playoffs. Even last year, it's fun leading up to the game. You know, it was quickly over after the first quarter. But even then, it was still kind of fun watching Brian Hoyer have 5 turnovers, just so you know that he'd be gone forever and embarrassed the Badlands.
Or Chicago, so you know, one in the same.
Yeah, and he wasn't that bad for Chicago this year too when he was healthy. So we're gonna run this podcast until the end of postseason, and then after Super Bowl we're gonna do our season review show, and then we're gonna crawl back into the dungeons that we live in. But even if the Texans lose this week, we're not gonna do a preview show, of course, but we're gonna still preview and do playoff picks and those sorts of things. And even though we're running out of time, we're not gonna make this be, you know, a 2-hour show. Let's go ahead and give our rest of our playoff picks, and we're gonna keep these throughout the year as well. Maybe do some sort of side pull or something, I don't know. But do you want to do these picks with the spread or without the spread?
With the spread.
Okay. So the first one is the Texans at -2.5.
So I picked the Texans by 3, 16-13. So I'm picking the Texans.
And the next one we have is Detroit against Seattle. And that game has Seattle favored by 7 points.
I'm also going to take Seattle on that one. All right, I will take Seattle on that one. That's the home field advantage there. It's just too big.
Yeah, and also the Lions have won 8 games with fourth quarter comebacks, and I don't see that happening in Seattle's, you know, defense. But also without Earl Thomas there, they should be able to move the ball some. Like, and this wasn't a good Detroit team at all this year. And I think with Russell Wilson against that bad defense, I think they're going to win, you know, by at least two scores pretty easily. And then the next one we have here is Pittsburgh is 9.5-point favorites over Miami.
Yeah, I'm taking Pittsburgh. At least the last I saw, Matt Moore was still supposed to be playing quarterback, and so I'm definitely going to take that one.
This one, I don't think Miami's good. They're another team that won a lot of close games against bad teams in the year, but very good at run blocking. Ajayi is awesome. Their defense doesn't have stars, where I think they're going to give Pittsburgh some trouble. So I think this is going to be like either a 7 or 10-point game. So I'm going to go with the Dolphins in this one. And I think we're looking for an upset aside from Oakland. This is probably the best upset that you have. Oh, never mind. That next game is. But I think this game's going to be closer than, you know, it's not going to be a 17-point game or anything like that at all. And the last one we have are the Packers are favored by 4.5 over the New York Giants.
This one is a tough one. The Packers are so erratic. The Giants' defense play has been very good this year. You just don't really know which Packers defense is going to show up. I'm going to take the Giants in an upset.
Do you think they're going to win straight up?
I think they're going to win straight up. So
yeah,
obviously beating the spread.
Yeah, and I think that too. I think their defense is just, you know, really good, especially their secondary. And I don't know, it's just it's such a very good defense. I think the one kind of question mark, though, is like, which Eli Manning are you going to get? Are you going to get Eli Manning that actually is going to go this crazy hot streak like he's done before in the past? Or is it going to be like a 17-point, you know, Giants, you know, endeavor? Because I think they're going to – I think it's going to be a close game. It's going to be like 2017 or something along those lines. And so the last question I have for you tonight is, what is your Super Bowl as of right now entering the playoffs?
Seahawks and Steelers.
And who do you have winning?
Seahawks.
Yeah, and I have Atlanta beating the Patriots in Super Bowl this year. Matt Ryan, MVP, 100%. Yeah, so do you have anything else you want to add at all?
No, I don't think so.
Right. Well, I got all your blood in the ledger, so we have that saved, and we'll review that probably whenever we end the Super Bowl as well, too, and just see how these picks go. And then next week, we should have the winner of the Cecil Shorts Memorial League as well, too. But, yeah, thanks for being on tonight. I know it was a little bit of a longer episode just because there's so much to cover right now. But thanks for being on tonight again, because that's what I do over and over again. Thanks for listening live. You listen live. Thank you for the questions, Renee Rogers and Texian Army. And we'll be back on next week, Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central Time. My name is Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Bell Red Radio. And have a great night.
Woo!
I thought it was pretty good.